Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.org. On Inside Analog Photo Radio today, Tracy Tesmer. Tracy is a very cool photographer out of Austin, Texas, 100% film, shooting twin lens reflex cameras, instant photography. Holga's does some very cool workshops on the complete Holga process. A lot of great stuff going on. Definitely check out Tracy's website. We're going to have a great talk with her today about her work, how she got into photography, and all the great stuff that she's doing. Tracy, how's it going today?
Really great.
Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program today and feature yourself and your cool photography.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
This is very cool. So, Tracy, let's talk about your involvement in photography, how you got started, and your whole transition from film to digital and back to film. So, let's chat about how you got started in shooting. You've been shooting for quite a while.
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I was 9 years old when my dad, he was an amateur hobbyist photographer. And I'm originally from Nebraska, and we go out and watch the Sandhills cranes migrate. I was really small, and my dad couldn't quite get the photos that he wanted, so he handed his camera over to me, and I went out into the field, and that was my first adventure into photography.
Wow, how cool was that?
Oh, it was awesome. It was amazing to be a part of that, and that really was the thing that bit me with photography. That was the beginning of just my thrill with it and everything that I've gotten involved with it since.
So let's move through here. Did you shoot photography in high school and college? Tell me how that went.
Actually, in my high school, we didn't have a lot of student photographers. I was involved in the yearbook and things like that, but most of the photographers were the teachers or adults or things like that. I was mostly a painter in high school, but I was constantly asking my parents for film and cameras and things like that, and taking my friends out and doing these quote-unquote fashion shoots with them. And as I went into college, that is when I picked it up semi-pro, was a photojournalist in college, worked for the newspaper, things like that, worked in the darkroom. And when I returned to school in my early 30s is when I really got even more involved with it.
So you never actually planned on being a photographer then?
Nope. For me, it was just a fascination with visual art, things like that. I was actually a painter. That's what I really wanted to do.
How have you found your interest and background in painting and more, I would say, physical arts and that kind of stuff influence your photography or vice versa?
I would have to say it influenced me to take my time with photography to really flesh out the details. Painting, you really have to pay attention to the details, and in my photography, I do that also. That's the main influence.
So what brought you back to actually want to be a photographer?
When I came back to school in my early 30s, I was involved in painting still and drawing and things like that, and they offered a digital photography course, and I had never shot a digital camera before. And so I took that course, and I was really involved with music in Omaha, Nebraska, with the music scene. And I picked up my camera, and I went and offered to shoot this concert. And after I got the images back and started editing them and started placing them online, a lot of musicians, both local and regional, started contacting me, and it just kind of exploded from there. I actually ended up dropping out of school because I started touring with bands and doing albums and things like that, and it just took off.
So tell me about your experiences when you got back into photography and you jumped both feet in digital.
When I jumped both feet in digital, I was not prepared, I think, at first for the amount of work. I was constantly gone. I was never home. I was constantly traveling. My camera was constantly in front of my face. Everybody knew that that's where I would be. I would be at all the concerts. I did a lot of work for free. I think it added, though, to what I do because I had such a passion for it. It wasn't about the money. It was about just being there and being able to capture these images. And I really just totally, like you said, jumped both feet in. I actually had a couple articles written about me, especially being a female in the music photography industry. I was not afraid to get on stage. I was not afraid to get in people's faces and get up close and personal. Because of that, a lot of the bands really liked me. I wasn't about, ooh, you're rock stars. I was there to document what was going on.
Very cool. So do you still take a liking to musical, musician-type photography?
Yes, I do. It's still a passion for me. Unfortunately, moving from Nebraska to Texas, I have not been able to get back into it as much. I did it for 2 years, very heavy. So moving here, there's not quite the music scene that I had there and the support that I had there. So I haven't been able to do it as much here, which I do miss. I very much miss it.
It's amazing you would think there'd be more musical stuff going on in Houston, but...
I hope that there is. I don't want to say anything bad, but Omaha really has a really awesome, supportive local music scene, and I was really heavily involved in it. And even when I started getting into the national music scene, the music photography has really changed since I started. Back when I started, there were very few women doing it. It was very hard to get a press pass, especially if you were a woman. Especially my size. I'm only 4'11". I've been knocked over, things like that. And it's really, really changed. Now it's become almost corporate, a little less independent. I see a little less, I wouldn't necessarily say passion, but a lot of it has become, and I'm not afraid to say this, very quick, 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 rapid fire. It's not about creating, like it used to be in the past, those iconic images as much as it used to be.
No, I think you're right. I think now it's like I'm doing a gig for XYZ outlet. I'm going to come in with my digital. I'm going to burn off 300 photos before they kick me out in 15 minutes, and that's it, later.
Yep, that's pretty much what I see it becoming. I hope, I do music photographers, some young ones who are starting out there, who have the same passion that I had for it, who are hopefully going to kind of change that back around.
So now you're in Houston, Texas. You've ditched digital, and you've gone 100% film. You're back to your roots. What are you doing these days?
Mostly, I'm shooting a lot of kids. Kids love my film camera, so do their parents. They like to watch me load the film. They're really interested in it, and I just work really well with kids, and I do some really interesting stuff with them. I do a lot of my own personal work, mostly portraits. I really like to break it down with the portraits. If I see someone, I like their look. I see something interesting about them, something that they maybe do, like foodies, chefs, things like that, and I'll ask to photograph them. I'll pick out strangers and photograph them. I also have been working a lot with couples. It's a very interesting dynamic to watch two couples together and see how they interact with each other. I think that I make people really, really comfortable so they're able to forget the camera is there. I also work with a waist-level viewfinder, so I'm actually looking at people. I don't have a camera in front of my face. They're seeing my face and I'm interacting with them. Another thing that I'm working a lot with, for some reason, lately, I'm doing a lot of intimate photography. I really am not a big fan of the word boudoir, because I think it's kind of become sort of a cheesy sort of thing. So I call it intimate provocative photography, and I've had a lot of requests for that. So I'm doing a lot of that. Kind of back to the old idea of it. It's still being intimate, a woman in her bedroom, and that kind of idea. So doing a lot of that. I've done some commercial work, doing a lot with the cigar industry. I'm a cigar smoker, so I've been working a lot with the cigar industry and cigar smokers.
Wow, how cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
No, that's very neat. So let's chat about, I guess, your passion about photography. What do you like to shoot the best? What's your favorite thing to shoot?
People. Just getting a person in front of my camera, no holds barred, and just grabbing them and not setting it up. Just saying, I'm going to take your portrait. I'm going to take you here, I'm going to place you here, and I'm going to take your portrait. And I sit down and I talk with them first, and half the time they don't even know that I'm shooting. That's my real passion, because that's when you get the real, honest person. And I've had people cry in front of my camera during those times. I don't ask people to smile. As a matter of fact, a lot of times they don't. I'm like, do not smile. I want to see you naturally as you are.
I guess if you smile naturally, then you'll catch it. But otherwise, well, there it is.
There it is. Yep, exactly.
So unless there's a concept type shoot, everything is pretty much natural the way the person is. It's not contrived and posed and worked on. It's just who you are is what I'm taking.
Yep, who you are is exactly what I'm taking. And I find that people really appreciate that. For example, I had a young man who had a scar. And he'd had that scar for years. And he had always tried to hide it. And I photographed him. And he said because of my photograph, from then on, he refused to hide it. It was, that's his scar. That belongs to him. There's a story behind it. And I told the story, and I was faithful to the story, and told him honestly who he was. And that, for me, is a huge thrill.
No, I mean, that's great that you were able to unlock this person and let them be free.
Yeah, it is. That does have some drawbacks, though. Oftentimes, when you do that, when you're the kind of photographer that you really try to seek out who a person really is, sometimes people are not too happy with what they see. Maybe that particular day they have something going on, or they've had something bothering them for a while, or maybe they really need to work on who they are. And camera does not lie. It shows that. And sometimes they really are not happy about it.
Well, then I guess they can be happy and come back later. You know, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't change it.
No, exactly. And the thing is I think that that's part of what I do. That's a growth for them. And I've actually had people come to me during those periods of times in their lives when they were trying to make decisions, or they had something going on, or they've had a death in the family or some major event. And they asked me to photograph them during that time. And then we wait a little while, and they come back maybe a year later or 6 months later or whatever, after they've had time to get through the grieving process or get through the decision-making process. And then I photograph them again. And you get to see the journey of them as a person and what they've done emotionally and physically and psychologically through that. And it shows.
I bet it does. Very interesting. So let's chat about your gear. You like to shoot with a Mamiya. Tell me about what you're digging these days.
My favorite camera is a Mamiya C330. I love it. It's got a waist-level viewfinder. It is a TLR. It's a medium format. I shoot 120. I'm not a big fan of 220. Partially because I'm kind of clumsy, to be honest with you. And 220 film doesn't have paper backing all the way through. So you have a chance of having light leaks and things and exposing the film. But I love the Mamiya C330. I have a trigger grip on it, but I actually don't use the trigger grip to trigger it. I actually trigger it from the other side. The shutter is extremely quiet. Half the time people don't even know I'm clicking the shutter. And then they'll hear it wind. The look on their faces is just amazing, and I just love to hear that sound of the film winding through there. I love the quality of it. Having that waist-level viewfinder, it's super sharp, and it gives you this depth to your images.
You know what I think the deal is with the waist-level viewfinder is you still have a connection with your subject. You're not hiding behind a camera.
Nope, you aren't. And I'm short. I'm 4'11". If you see a lot of my shots, they're taken from my point of view. I don't stand on a ladder. I don't try to make myself taller. They're taken from my point of view and how I see people, and people like that. Now, with children, sometimes I'll have them like sit down and things like that, and I'll take it from above and use that camera. But I can get in super close, too, with that camera and get in really close to people. And like you said, don't have a camera in front of your face. You don't have a lens sticking out there. People just see the lens. They don't see the person behind it. And this way, they're able to see the person behind it, and I'm able to interact with people.
Tell me about your favorite piece of glass for the Mamiya. Of course, it has changeable lenses, so do you stick with the 80 that it came with, Do you like to change around or just go with the 80?
I just go with the 80. That's my favorite one.
How cool.
I actually have a couple new lenses. I had a photographer that I met at WPPI in Vegas. He saw me with my Mamiya C330, and he's like, I have one of those. I don't shoot it anymore. Do you want it? And I asked him how much, and he said, nothing. I just want you to use it and take care of it.
Wow, how cool.
And the suitcase arrived in the mail with all these lenses, but I still kind of stick with the 80. I'm ready to play with the other ones, but I stick with the 80.
Yeah, I have a C220, and I use the 80 pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
But I've been wanting this 135, but the problem is the glass is slow.
Yeah.
And you start putting the longer glass on, that might be cooler for portrait work, but you need some faster film. So let's chat about film. What do you like to shoot? What's your favorite tasty emulsion? What are you liking?
Fuji. Fuji Pro 400H. Oh, yeah. Now, I started out with Portra.
Yeah.
The 400 VC or the 400 NC.
Yeah.
I got to the point where a lot of people were requesting me to shoot indoors and in their homes and things like that. And I just felt that the Portra was a little too warm. I like warmth, but not that much warmth. So I started trying more of the Fuji. I usually overexpose by 2 stops, especially in lower light or cloudy days.
Wow, 2 stops, so cool.
Yep. It gave me more of a consistency. A consistency in the skin tones, a consistency in the look that I like. I also like the brightness of it. The grain is incredible with it, too.
Yeah, I do find that you can definitely overexpose more with the Fuji stock. It does get really creamy and light and yummy. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's my favorite. The other film stock I shoot with is Expired. Expired 800 NPZ.
Really?
Yeah, I love the look of it. Especially if I'm doing photojournalistic work, I like the grain that comes out in Expired film. It's just the grittiness of it.
Yeah, it is good stuff. Do you find that you shoot all color, and if you want black and white, you just convert it after it comes back from the lab?
Not necessarily. It depends on what I'm doing. For example, I am a big fan of the BW400CN. It's the richness of it. I've actually had a couple photographers stick their nose up at me for shooting that particular black and white film because it is a C41 process film, but I like the richness of it. I also like to shoot Expired Ilford for black and white. If I'm doing a particular look for, like, for example, I do cigar portraits. These are portraits of cigar smokers. I have a particular black and white that I've created in post to use with those. So for those, I do shoot color and then I convert later. And I usually only use that particular black and white for that subject.
Wow, great stuff. So let's chat about your wedding work. I know that you've been working on some wedding things, and how's that playing into the mix about what you're shooting?
Actually, I don't have as of yet to shoot an all-film wedding. I shot weddings before for several years, and I took a year off. I had the opportunity last summer to travel to Block Island with a good friend of mine, Gwyneth Colleen, and was her second shooter. It renewed my love of weddings, and we got to shoot outdoors, and of course it was Block Island in Rhode Island. It was absolutely gorgeous. Looking at that, I didn't do anything to those images but straight out of camera. And it really gave it the same look that I achieved with the film. So I've started getting back into weddings. I've had a lot of inquiries. I really want smaller, unique weddings. People who really are interested in having film.
Yeah, these images up on your site from the wedding you were talking about are very cool.
Those are actually digital images. That's actually how I used to do my digital images, was straight out of camera, and then I would try to emulate film. And that is part of the reason why I went back to film. I shot in such a way that I never did the rapid fire exposure. I never did click, 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 click. If I was going to tell a couple or a family or whatever, you're going to get 30 images, I shot 30 images. And this was on digital. I would take it home and I would put grain into it to make it look like film. Well, you kind of get to the point where you're like, why am I putting in all this time? I know how to do film. Why am I not shooting film? So that's when I switched over.
So have you found that this transition back to film has hampered your shooting because of cost, processing, lab fees, so forth and so on?
Yes and no. It has hampered a little bit in how much personal work I've been able to shoot. I still manage to shoot quite a bit of it, but not as much as I used to. It, however, has not hampered as far as the clientele. I actually have been getting clientele who truly appreciate film, and it's wonderful to see that. Maybe their former family photographer or whoever they worked with before shot film, and they can't find another photographer who shoots only film, they find me. I've actually had one family who has said to me, they had a former family photographer who shot film. They found me, they hired me, and they actually called me. They said, thank you for being our family historian. It's so incredible to hear that. So no, in that manner, as far as finding clients and booking clients, it hasn't. But as far as shooting personal work, it has hampered it a little bit.
But you have to admit, though, when the stuff comes back from the lab, you don't have to do very much to it, if any.
Nope, no, I do not.
So you do nothing to the scans. When they come back, that's it.
Sir, that's it, yes.
Did it take you a while to work up a profile with your lab, or was it pretty much out of the box done?
Pretty much out of the box done. I talked to my lab. I use Richard Photo Lab, and they actually talked to me for a couple hours. They looked over my work, and they got it very quickly. There is some stuff that I do scan myself. I do have my own scanner, and once in a while when I have the time, I scan my own personal work and things like that, or sometimes I'll scan clients. It looks exactly the same.
What are you looking forward to in the future, moving forward with your photography? Is it more of your intimate stuff? What do you want to do?
Actually, yeah, I would actually like to hone things down even further. I really enjoy doing children. It's a big thrill for me, and I've been booking a lot more children. Children, couples, and the intimate work. Really pushing, especially with the intimate work, getting away from that sort of cheesy, bright, overexposed, way saturated, boudoir type work, back into more of that intimate photography.
Yeah, I think if you look at the images that are on your site and your other website, it definitely shows that it's not your typical latest run-of-the-mill boudoir stuff. It's definitely more intimate.
Yeah, exactly. I actually photographed a young lady in Vegas when I was there for WPPI. And I'm getting ready to put that up also, and she was thrilled. She was absolutely thrilled. We didn't do the fancy lingerie. We didn't do any of that. There was very little makeup. It was her own jewelry. It was just messy bed in the hotel room in Vegas, and it was just her.
But that's reality, though, correct?
That's reality, and I think that with intimate photography for both men and women, and I've done some intimate photography of men also, that's what they want to see. It becomes fine art, then. You've turned what they see every day of their partner or their wife or girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, you've turned it into something beautiful, that everyday look.
I think that's definitely refreshing, and people will gravitate towards that type of look.
I hope so. Thank you.
And also, like you said, there's not a lot of people that are doing that. They're doing the super overexposed, red satin, crazy lingerie over the top stuff, and I guess that's cool to a point. If someone wants it, I'm sure you could accommodate their needs.
Oh yeah, if someone would want that, definitely. And I would probably make it really over the top, like pin-up, things like that. But I really gravitate towards that more intimate, natural look.
Any other formats you'd like to shoot? Any other cameras? What do you like to shoot besides your Mamiya? Or do you?
Yes, my Holga. My Holga goes with me everywhere. What? I usually have a roll loaded in it at all times. I drop that thing in my purse, and no matter where I go, that goes with me.
So what do you like the Holga? Let's talk about that.
The reason why I like the Holga is because you have absolutely no control over the camera itself. It is a plastic lens. It's a plastic camera. Mine's held together by a rubber band half the time. If I can't find the clips or the clips have fallen off, I held it together with a rubber band. Some of us hold it together with tape. And it's just that you have no control over the camera itself. The only thing you have control over is your film stock and your outside light coming in and your subject. That's it. And it's just spontaneous for me. And it's a challenge for me. A lot of times you'll see Holga work and it's crazy cross-process type work. I don't do that. I use about 50-50. 50% of the time I'm using the Fuji, the Pro 400H, and or I'm using an Ilford black and white 50% of the time. I just make it look natural. It's just a different look. It's square format. You're seeing things through a plastic lens. And it's very spontaneous, and that's what I really like about it. You never know quite what you're going to get out of it.
Do you shoot with any other rig besides the Mamiya and the Holga?
I also have a little Canonette rangefinder. Bought the camera for $5, and I'm not afraid to say this. It works beautifully. Those rangefinders have this incredible sharpness to them. With that one, I use expired film most of the time. I'll shoot simple portraits with it. It's a little camera that I can pull out. And then I also have a Bronica ETR-SI. I don't use that a lot, mostly because it has a prism viewfinder, and I really do prefer the waist level viewfinder. But most of the time, I'm shooting my Mamiya C330, and now I have a second one to shoot also. So I'll be shooting color in one and black and white in the other, so I can switch back and forth between the cameras, and my Holga. That's most of the time what I'm shooting with.
Tell me about your workshops. Do you have a unique workshop program going on for people that want to learn how to shoot Holgas? Or maybe just toy cameras in general. So tell me about sort of what you got cooking there, because it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I have a workshop coming up on May 16th. I'm really excited about it. Richard Photo Lab is sponsoring, which is absolutely incredible. What they're giving to the participants is really incredible. Also, my participants are actually going to get a Holga and film with the workshop. In the workshop, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do some basics about film, teach people what film is. These are the different film stocks, how to choose your film stock. But mostly what the workshops are about is storytelling, is how to pick up this camera that could possibly become your everyday point and shoot versus having a digital point and shoot. And pick it up, take it with you, be able to tell stories with it, drop off that film, pick up that film, and have everything already there. Not having to worry about post-processing, things like that, and just being spontaneous with your photography and being able to tell a story at the same time with the simplest of tools.
How do you like to meter when you're using your Mamiya and your Holgas? Do you just sort of guess? Do you actually use a meter? What are you doing?
I use a hand meter.
Yeah.
I use a Seconic L308. It's a very, very simple, cheap meter. I don't have any need right now for anything any more expensive than that, so that's what I use. A lot of times I'm shooting outdoors, so I use the Sony 16 rule, to be honest with you. I know my exposures pretty well, and I know my light fairly well. So I guesstimate, and I would say 100% of the time spot on when I do forget my meter, which isn't very often. With the Holga, that's all strictly by my eye. That goes strictly by my experience with shooting different roles in different situations with different film stocks. If I want to try out a new film stock, oftentimes what I'll do is I'll take it out and I'll simulate different situations, and I'll take a test roll, and I'll mark off what I've shot at and what the light's been like, what the conditions are. I'll get it developed, and I'll save that roll, and so I'll have that as a reference to go back to.
I think, too, plus with you overexposing by a couple stops, you have enough latitude there.
Yes, you do.
Okay, maybe it's only a stop and a half over, or three stops over, or a half a stop over. It still rocks. You can
exactly.
Just go with it. But the L308 is a great little meter.
Yeah, I love that meter. Simple, easy, quick, throw it in, not too expensive. I encourage even digital photographers, hand meter. Grab something inexpensive like a meter like that. Because the only camera that I have that actually meters is the Bonica, and I don't use it that often. So everything has to be hand metered, regardless.
Do you typically spot or use incident?
Spot.
Just look at them, and then you're metering for what? The shadows? Someone's face?
Usually their skin tone.
Yep.
Is what I meter for. Yeah, I'll get the skin tone. And sometimes I'll have a situation where I'll have got, say I'm photographing five people, and I've literally had five totally different skin tones. So what I do is I meter each person, their skin tone, and I kind of pick in between there.
Gives you a nice matrix balancing of their skin, I guess. And so it really matters because you're shooting people. That's your main gig.
Exactly. And I want their skin tones to look natural. You can play and things like that with the shadows and everything like that later, but it's really important with people to get their skin tones to look natural.
So very true, and overexposing the Fuji emulsion definitely makes for some yummy skin tone.
Film really doesn't hide things, but what it does too is it lifts that skin tone so much that if they have any blemishes or anything like that, they tend to disappear. You don't have to worry about doing it in post.
This is true. Overexpose your yummy C41 film, and you have almost built-in instant retouching. Things
exactly.
Just come out beautiful.
Yes, they do.
So tell me here, Tracy, about your website, your blog, all the stuff you're doing. The Holga Stories workshop and everything you're up to so people can actually look at your beautiful photography, check out your intimate work, and then, of course, your workshop coming up in Houston here.
My actual main website is www.tracytesmer.com, and from there you can actually get to Facebook and Twitter and things like that. You can also get to the other sites. The other site that I have is my intimate work. It's called www.uptheatticstairs.com. And also my workshop site, very simple, it's tracytesmerworkshop.com. And then I also have a personal photo journal that I do that I put a lot of my personal work on. And it's very candid. It's me writing, sometimes rambling, sometimes poetry, sometimes my everyday life. Sometimes I actually put on there my iPhone photos also. That is the only quote-unquote digital camera that I actually have. And that is called imtracytesmer.com.
Very cool. I really appreciate you taking some time to chat with us today, talk about your transition from film to digital and, of course, back to film and all this beautiful photography you're doing. This is great stuff.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful to talk with you.
Well, there you go. Tracy Tesmer. What a great girl. Beautiful photography. Very cool stuff. Lots of interesting stuff going on with her. Her Holga workshops. A lot of neat stuff. Check out her website, her portfolio. www.tracytesmer.com. TracyTesmer.com. The Inside Analog Photo Radio Program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film, and of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at dr5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at upstrap-pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at igerstudios.com. And, of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House, over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.